Ladies and gentlemen, another episode of the Detroit Football Network podcast with Justin Rogers. I am Stoney. I'm in beautiful Southfield, Michigan. Justin is in beautiful U.S. Bank Stadium, where the Lions defeat the Minnesota Vikings 31-29. And JR, I compared it on the 97.1 The Ticket post-game show. For me, it was like Ollie Frazier. It was like Hearns Hagler. You know, that was only three rounds. This was the whole game because the Vikings obviously came out smoking for what, you know, and we'll figure out why they went up 10-0. And then the Lions come right back and go up 11. And then the Vikings take the lead. And it was a great football game to watch.
Yeah, I think you summed it up perfectly. One, yes, beautiful U.S. Bank Stadium. I still contend best stadium experience in the NFL. I know Lions fans don't necessarily like some of the things the Vikings fans do with their clapping and their skulls, but I think it's cool. The game itself was unbelievable. I mean, you couldn't have asked for more of a playoff-esque atmosphere in week six or week seven or whatever we're in now. It really, you know, the Vikings lived up to their billing. They are a very good team. You know, still figuring some things out, I think, with some of their new personnel, but they gave the Lions everything they could handle and then some today. And you know, I mean, I was just on the edge of my seat, and I don't even care about the result. That's not my job. But I found myself standing up and just enthralled with the action, both offensively and defensively. It was just outstanding football.
Well, the way the game started was one of those, if you pay attention to social media, what the hell's going on? It's a little too early, you know, to fake a punt when it's, you know, fourth and seven at your own 33-yard line. They were ready for it. Reeves Maben got 1 yard, and boom, you know, two plays later, Aaron Jones goes 34 yards for a touchdown. Look, when that stuff works, it's great. It worked game one last year against Kansas City and Arrowhead. I didn't like it when it happened, but you know what? This is what they do.
Yeah, look, I think they've had probably what would be considered staggering success on fake punts. So I don't have the number in front of me, but it's probably around 8 out of 10 or 8 out of 11 at this point. I think you just appreciate that that's part of their identity, right? This particular one, the execution was weird. Didn't really come up in the post game just because so much other stuff happened, and it didn't end up costing them. I think if it, you know, had been something where they lost the game, it'd probably be a bigger topic. Yes. But I want to talk to Dave Phipp about that Thursday when we get a chance. I'm curious if the design was executed in the way they wanted. I think when you have a puller like that in front, when you add that element of motion, I think it kind of tips your hand or gives it away directionally to the opponent. I don't know, maybe the blocking just wasn't right. Somebody was missed, but there was an unblocked defender there, and Reeves maybe never had a shot. I mean, he just didn't. You know, he's a really athletic guy. He successfully converted a handful on those direct snaps to the personal protector. And so, you know, it's a play that's worked for the Lions. They wouldn't have snapped it if they didn't have a defensive look or a coverage look that they thought they could beat. But for whatever reason, it was executed poorly. And I imagine just with how that play looks start to finish, that one probably goes in the trash afterward from the playbook.
And not that it makes a difference, but because you never know, but Jones is scoring on that touchdown. Even if they would have punted and they ran the same play, he would have been a 67-yard touchdown rather than that was just well blocked. The Lions were, whether fooled or whatever, just out skiing. And that was the play, if I'm not mistaken. Is that the one where Arnold did not hold contain where he should have?
Yeah, I've made the comparison to Darius Slay in the past, and I think that's a really promising comparison to make to any rookie cornerback. But there was a play, I believe, in Slay's rookie season where he similarly cheated inside and the back cut back. Might have been a little bit more up the middle than around the edge, but Slay tried to recover and fell on his ass. And it was a really memorable play from his rookie season. And like, look, those are the rookie mistakes that are going to happen. That's a guy that Arnold had another one of those, and I can't remember the game specifically this year where he caught a little too far inside. It led to a very big run. It might have been Kenneth Walker in Seattle. And, you know, it's just that's an overeager rookie trying to make a play, and it's got to learn to stick with the do your job mentality, right? You can't get outside of yourself trying to be a superhero, because often in the NFL, the players on the opposite end are too talented and they will punish you when you're out of position. And that was a classic case.
So they go, you know, after that touchdown, so we had the three and out before the fake field goal, and yet another three and out. They hold them, not a fake field goal, a fake punt. They hold them to a field goal the next time, so it's 10-0. You're thinking, oh, my God, this could be a freaking blowout. And by the way, during the first quarter, I kind of tweeted out, you know, tongue in cheek, that, you know, Zeitler was out. And it was pretty obvious. Maybe it was because he was playing in front of his home fans or whatever. But Awosika was trying to set a record for most penalties in a quarter. He had three in the first quarter.
Oh, this officiating crew was a bit obnoxious. Not just in that regard. They were throwing too many flags against both teams. And I'm just one that loathes penalties disrupting the flow of football games. And that is not a Lions commentary. That is a football commentary. And I think I tweeted something, you know, along those lines, like we might get more flags than combined points. And sure enough, right out the gate in the second half, they threw three holding calls on one play. I don't know if I've ever seen that. Like two offensive, two defensive, or one defensive. And yeah, you know, Coyote got busted for two holds. I mean, they were legit. You know, I obviously, you hear it all the time. You can call holding on every play. I think he did restrict somebody that could have impacted the play, whatever. He had a false start that even on the replay, I didn't really see. But, you know, that's three penalties. And, you know, the Vikings have 10 points at the end of the first quarter. On the very last play of the first quarter, the Lions got their first down. You know, and you're just thinking, oh, this is going to be a rough day for the boys. It did not look good, but second quarter, the script changed.
Yeah, three straight possessions, three straight touchdowns. You got the Gibbs 45-yard run. Then they made them punt. Then you had the long touchdown pass, 35 yards to St. Brown. Minnesota punted again. And that was the branch interception, which was correct. A great freaking play. A great play. He is so freaking good. He, you know, we talked about how the Lions, you know, Hutchinson might be, you know, defensive player of the year. You're losing him.
No, Will was on it.
I know. Will Birchfield was right there, and we love him, and he's right. Branch has to be in consideration for defensive player of the year. And so they make the interception, and then they go down nine plays, 72 yards, Gibbs with the touchdown.
Don't move. More of the Detroit Football Network podcast is next.
I do want to mention this about the quarterback. And we talk about, you know, am I joking about maybe defensive player of the year? Mm-hmm. But especially after we saw what happened tonight with Brock Purdy, I don't want to hear anybody's guff, okay? Anybody's crap. Jared Goff has to be in the conversation right now. I'm not saying he's going to do this the rest of the year. Right now, because all those shows get up, first take, they do this stuff. MVP, he's got to be in consideration. Do you realize in the first half, three of the last four games, he's been 12 for 12 in three games, 12-12 against Arizona, 12 for 12 against Seattle, only 11 for 16 against Dallas, and 12 for 12 today. So he's been unbelievable.
So I just looked this up. This was a conversation this time last year as well, if you remember, and was equally merited on maybe even less so than this year. Cause Goff's been better through six games this year than he was last year. But, October 18th last year, I wrote a analysis piece kind of looking at where Goff stacked up at, you know, maybe I got to revisit that, because you're absolutely correct. Like, you have the four-game stretch that he's had with three first halves completely perfect. I don't know what his passer rating is through the last four games, but it's got to be 140-ish, maybe more. Not throwing interceptions, you know, connecting on deep balls, making great decisions, you know, balancing the check down with the deeper shots. Like, he'll tell you it's not perfect, and it never is in football, but, like, in terms of as close as you can get to perfect, it's right about there. And it's such a nice rebound for him, because I thought he started the season really slowly. You know, I thought he had a lot of what Pro Football Focus calls turnover worthy plays, where he was putting balls in danger early in the season. And he has just completely flipped a switch, playing at the highest level, I would argue, of his entire career. And the offense is just, it's humming, you know, on all fronts. I don't know if there's any other way to put it.
And they can't, you know, the cliche is pick your poison, but they have so many weapons. I mean, today it was, you know, a heavy dose of obviously St. Brown and Gibbs. J-Mo got one ball. Who cares? He's still blocking. Okay. Sam LaPorta.
Relentlessly, by the way.
One ball again. Khalif Raymond had some interesting plays. I mean, the bomb to Raymond, if Van Ginkle didn't come close to Goff where he had to step up and throw it maybe a little further than he wanted to, that could have been a touchdown or at least a really long game. They, if you're a defensive coordinator, and Brian Flores is one of the best, and they did overall a decent job, you don't know what to do. Who are you covering? Who are you doubling?
You know, I was thinking about this week. It was a couple of years ago, and I made this observation that the Lions had played the Ravens. And I get it, like Jared Goff is not Lamar Jackson, but from the sense of what Baltimore does is you have to defend Lamar Jackson's mobility. And you don't have to defend Jared Goff's mobility, but you have to defend Detroit's running game in the same way. You cannot ignore it. You have to keep defenders close to the line of scrimmage, or, you know, David Montgomery or Jahmyr Gibbs will play. And what that does is it opens up the deep shot. And so you said it right. You have to pick your poison against this team. And, you know, it's just something I don't think we've ever seen here. Like, you either defend the run game or you defend J-Mo deep or Tim Patrick or even Amon-Ra or Khalif Raymond and situationally deep. And, you know, they'll sometimes be patient and wait and get a feel for what you're doing defensively, but they're going to attack the opposite of what you're doing, and they have the horses to do it in a way that I don't think we've ever seen from a Lions offense since probably the Tom Moore days, right? I mean,
yes.
Like the Barry Sanders, Herman Moore, Brett Perriman.
Yes,
that,
you're
that,
correct.
That offense was the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned St. Brown. Well, I guess George Pickens can shove his slot merchant crap up his ass. I mean, St. Brown obviously went some longer routes today. 8 targets, 8 receptions, 112 yards, and the 35-yarder, a touchdown. I mean, he was brilliant today.
He has thrived against Brian Flores's scheme all 3 times that they've played the Vikings. He had 2 really, really good games last year. He was their leading receiver, really impactful in both those wins last year. And he did it again. And I asked him in the locker room, I said, what is it about this defense? And he said, well, it's really exotic. It shows you a ton of different looks. Like, he goes, it is one of the best in the league, but he goes, part of that is they throw a ton of zone looks at you. And he goes, I am just very comfortable in zone. And he kind of explained how he just spends all this time on the practice field in the offseason during film study, talking to Jared Goff. Hey, what did you see here? Why did you call this play? Why did you kill this play? Why did you audible into this play? And so he's built up this just massive catalog of knowledge in his brain that he sees the field in the same way Jared Goff does. And that's what you talk about with symmetry or chemistry with a quarterback. And so Goff tells him, when Ben Johnson tells Amon-Ra, the defense they're expecting, this is what we're expecting based on the way they look. If you see this, go here. This is the hole to attack this defense. And his comprehensive understanding of scheme, of defensive scheme, paired with his obvious, you know, athletic physical gifts, is what is allowing St. Brown to thrive, not just here, but, you know, particularly against this defensive scheme.
Running the ball, Sonic and Knuckles. Sonic was unbelievable. Knuckles had a tough day. I don't know if you talked to him after the game. I know, I'm sure he took it hard, and I'm sure Gibbs went up to him and said, I got you. And Gibbs was tremendous. Maybe his best game as a Lion.
I agree.
Mean, I don't know if statistically would prove that, but, you know, 15 for 116, and he caught the ball all 4 targets for 44 yards, and he was really good. And he had some tough yardage that he had to gain, and he did.
Yeah, I would put this one up there against the Raiders game from last year, where he had kind of carry the load with Montgomery out that game. Montgomery did not talk. He declined interview requests. It happens sometimes. Their guys aren't supposed to. They're required to talk after games, but I mean, if it's going to happen once, you had a rough day, you physically got banged up, you had fumble. Like, would I like to get his perspective of how he's feeling? What went through his head? Sure, but not gonna cry over it. It's not what it's about. I did talk to Gibbs. The sense of relief that Montgomery was able to return was just something that was felt throughout the roster. It wasn't just Gibbs that felt it, but he mentioned it uplifted the entire offense. The minute Montgomery stepped back out there, I couldn't believe it when he returned. I don't know what they showed on TV, but like, he was in worlds of pain being helped off the field. I mean, was moving like a geriatric patient being helped by two trainers. I legitimately thought there was a chance he was done for the year. And I don't, I'm not a doctor. I looked at the replay. I didn't see anything, but just the way he was moving was concerning. To see him back out there was just wild. But Gibbs said, look, I am fully confident if I need to shoulder the load, I can. And he showed that today. And, that was something that came up from his position coach last week, Scotty Montgomery. He needs to make that last man miss. And I think the next game he got tackled by the safety again or twice. And a couple of us chuckled about it in the press box. It just wasn't happening. And so the sense of relief he felt scoring that 45-yard touchdown, he described to me, as he said, I got tired of scoring 1-yard touchdowns. He goes, I feel like all my touchdowns are 1 yard. So he goes, I needed this. And it felt amazing.
Let's talk about the offensive line. It was good. It wasn't as dominant. But look, Minnesota's got some pretty good pass rushers. We see why, the Lions allegedly, and I know a lot of the fans in the offseason wanted to get Greenard from Houston. When he was a free agent, he went to Minnesota. Obviously, Zeitler's injury was obviously a change, so they, had to make a lineup change there. But look, Minnesota, when you look at the stats, they had the same amount of sacks as the Lions did, but they had pressure in Goff's face a lot more than the Lions had in Darnold. So that has to be cleaned up a little bit. Would you agree?
For sure. And Zeitler being out did matter. The defense and the amount they blitzed did matter. But how can you complain about what Goff was able to accomplish? And that's really, that goes back to what I said about Amon-Ra. Like, that's three straight games against the Flores defense where Goff has found the answer key. And yeah, did he eat some sacks? Sure. But overall, I mean, it was just such a stellar performance against a really tough defense. And I don't know, is that the most points Minnesota's given up this year? I would think it was.
Probably. They played San Francisco. It was actually struggling.
Yep. I'm looking up now. Yep. It is the most they've given up. They gave up 29 to the Packers. And I think a lot of those Packers points came in. 22 came in the fourth quarter when they were way, way down. So I don't think this is comparable to that in any way.
Final thing for the offense. Somebody gave us a ticket text on the postgame show. And, who knows if it plays into this at all. But somebody said, the Tampa loss could have been a blessing in disguise because they realized that they can't throw the ball 55 times and they need to, focus more on the running game. Do you buy that? Not that a loss is good, but you know what I'm saying.
No, I understand what they're saying. And I don't know if it was so much the passing more than running in that game. It was their inability to execute in the red zone. They should have won that game. They did everything right. You go 1-for-7 in the red zone, you're not going to win.
Right.
That was a rough day for them. I think it was a wake-up call for Ben Johnson in terms of, finding better ways to scheme in the red zone to not let other opponents replicate that at success. But Tampa's really, really good at that stuff. I mean, they play just such tight, well-disciplined zone coverage that, that's just the reality of it. I think the Lions certainly have leaned more into this identity of run the ball, set up the play action. I think they're running more play action than they ever have. And Goff just clearly thrives in those situations.
All right. That's a look at the offense. There is another side of the ball. Was it good, bad, ugly? We'll give our opinions on that coming up when the Detroit Football Network podcast continues after this. All right, back on the Detroit Football Network podcast. I'm Stoney along with Justin Rogers. Justin is in Minneapolis. We just went through the offense. Defensively, you know, they gave up 29 points, but they made key plays when they had to. Let's start up front. Obviously, the first game where they didn't have Hutch the entire game. At times, they put a little bit of pressure. Darnold, I'll give him credit. He's a little more mobile than I thought. I remember him in the Carolina game a couple years ago running the ball. But he was able to, when they did have guys in their face, he was able to duck and maneuver and things like that. I thought Pascal had a pretty good game. And Houston actually made his presence felt a little bit, which was a good sign.
Yeah, I don't even know if Houston showed up on the box score. I don't recall him actually getting a tackle or a hit on the quarterback, but he had two plays on third down in the second half. One where both of them, he generated pressure that led to the drive ending, and they both ended in field goals, but it didn't matter. That was a point in the game where you needed to keep them out of the end zone. Quietly impactful plays that would get lost, I think, if we don't mention them, whether written word or on this podcast. So absolutely deserves some credit. It was really interesting. I was trying to write down all the different guys that were rolling through it on the edge. And they started with Pascal and Ukwu. And I think Ukwu probably will be the guy we find tomorrow that played the most snaps. I don't feel, just on the initial viewing, that he had a significant impact, but I also don't feel like he made any glaring errors. Just, you know, wasn't able to get the pressure and that push into the pocket that, that a Pascal or a Davenport or a Hutchinson does, which I don't know what I'm expecting for an undrafted rookie. Like that's a tall ask. Also on the edge, we saw Levi, we saw Makai Wingo, we saw Pat O'Connor making his Lions debut approximately 14 years after he was drafted.
He had two assists on tackles. I want to ask you about Levi.
Yeah.
In watching the game, granted the television, you get to see it from up above. So I don't think – I might have seen him one play. So I don't know if he played poorly or just – he was just a non-factor scheme. I don't know. It just he did not even, register on my eyesight at all.
Yeah, I felt – The overall game of the defensive tackles was a little quiet. You know, I didn't see a whole lot of Aleem in this one, which I was surprised. Maybe the guy I saw the most was DJ Reader, mm-hmm. even though he only recorded two tackles. You know, he does a lot of little things that kind of cause problems with the way he absorbs double teams. But, I think pressure's still a problem. I think they're going to have to still find a way to add somebody. Continue to be fascinated by what Isaiah Thomas can bring to the mix, but that goes back to my Ukwu comment. You know, undrafted rookie, what do I expect? Well, what do I expect off of practice squad poaching? I think there has to be a ceiling of expectation there and probably a fairly low ceiling of expectation. The trade market is going to continue to be a discussion. I'm sure you saw the Za'Darius Smith comments this week. I certainly saw them. He is not opposed to being traded to Detroit, and I don't think the Lions would be opposed to adding somebody of that caliber if the price is right.
Yeah, and obviously Reddick's out of the equation now because he re-signed with the Jets. The one thing before we get to the play of the linebackers and the secondary, including how great Branch was again, it's something that people don't realize, I think, and I think they showed a graphic during the game. We're all focused on Hutch, okay? Mm-hmm. They are missing Hutch, Davenport, Derek Barnes, and Comiskey. Mm-hmm. So four guys that, 4 months ago, they thought was going to be integral parts of this football team.
And four guys that lined up on the line of scrimmage. I know Derek Barnes is listed as a linebacker, but that was not his primary role this year. Yeah, he was dropping back, but where did he start? He started down on the line, and he was mm-hmm. rushing the passer quite a bit more this year. So, you're dipping very deep into your depth chart. God, I mean, how much could they use a John Comiskey right now?
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about a stabilizing force, a workhorse, a guy that plays the style they like with the build they like. They could really use a guy like him. But, every time I've kind of checked in on where that's at in the recovery, it doesn't sound particularly close. I think that you're still looking optimistically at December at best for that, if at all. And so, yeah, like I said, I think they're still going to need some help there. I think they should be encouraged that they were able to get past an undefeated Vikings team with what they had. But, you know, it'll give them some good film to look at what it looks like going forward as well.
When you look defensively, I do want to ask about two plays that, you know, I'm going to give the Lions credit for. Maybe Minnesota kind of screwed up as well. But these are very important plays in the fourth quarter. Stopping the two-point conversion, which changed the whole complexion of what the Lions had to do at the end of the game. And the next time, you know, Minnesota got the ball back where they, you know, they screwed up. They thought that they, you know, it set up their field goal. Or that was earlier, but it was a play, you know what I'm talking about. Third and seven, where Darnold was sacked, set up the field goal. And then there was another play on third down where you saw O'Connell talk to Darnold. So you had a guy who was, you know, more open, and he threw it to the end zone.
Yeah.
And those plays were very significant.
Sure. The two-point conversion in particular, the Lions have been doing a lot more of this. I think they've done a lot of good job of switching coverage assignments. And sometimes it's still clunky. And I think, you know, still a little bit of communication issues working out. You got to remember, a lot of these guys are still, you know, in their first year with each other. They missed a lot of training camp time together. But you're seeing coverage handoffs really well on some of the crossing patterns. That's just making it tougher for those guys to get open. And that's what O'Connell said, you know, caught them off guard on that two-point conversion was the cover switches. And they had apparently an answer to that, but, you know, didn't execute it. And, you know, I look at Darnold and I say, it's just, he's everything, I guess you thought or had read coming into this game. He is playing at a very high level. He is, a quarterback that you can win with, that you can take to the playoffs, that could probably win a playoff game. But like, you see still some of the bigger mistakes. I would highlight the branch interception as the biggest.
Yes.
For the life of me, cannot figure why he did not throw that ball to Aaron Jones. I mean, the back was wide open. He was downfield. He had so much grass in front of him. And maybe the play design was to get the defensive attention drifting that way and get Addison open for the bigger play. But I am of the belief when you have something that open, you just take what's given to you and not worry about getting the maximum gain. And, you know, the way Branch described it to me, they disguised the coverage. They showed him cover one. It was cover two. Darnold described it the same way, that the Lions did a really good job disguising it on him. And, you know, both those safeties, if the disguise works and they bait you into something, they will make you pay. I mean, they both have incredible instincts, hands, range, and it's four interceptions for both now, correct?
Yeah.
And so it's going to be really fun to see kind of that. I know they're both competing for the league lead, but just you know that it's going to get really competitive between those two, a friendly competition on who can finish on top on the team, because I mean, it's going to go down to the wire. I wouldn't be surprised if either one of them, you know, get to double digits.
Now, aside from the play that we described earlier in the game and the podcast, the Terry and Arnold lack of contain on the Jones touchdown, you know, Carlton Davis got a little handy. I thought this, you know, all things considered, I mean, Justin Jefferson's the best receiver in the league, and you do keep him to, you know, under 100 yards, 81 yards, I believe. That's pretty good. He did the touchdown he caught. Robertson had pretty damn good coverage. He just turned it a little too late.
It was a great push off by Jefferson. Yes. I'm not even mad. Like, it was so fast. It was like a Mike Tyson jab. Like, he just threw out that arm and then pulled it back so quickly. And I just, there's certain guys that are so good at what they do and so good with the little nuances of getting away. I call them, you know, vet moves or whatever. Was it a push off? Was it offensive pass interference? Yeah, absolutely. But the way he did it in real time was so subtle and so quick that, you know, that he doesn't draw a flag because he's Justin Jefferson and he's great. And I asked Amik about it. I go, you ever get sick of that? And he goes, it's life as a DB, man. Like, it's just, it is what it is. I have to be better. And, you know, I got to forget it, flush it, and go on to the next play. And he goes, if you look whatever the next play was, and I don't remember it specifically, he's like, I was right back in his face on the next one. And so I wrote before the game, if they could keep Jefferson around 100 yards, it was going to be very important to their chances of winning this game. And, you know, I would guess, I think it was the touchdown drive, he had more than half of that production.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you held him to 40-ish yards for the other 10 possessions, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Yeah, 10 possessions. You held him to 40 yards. That's a pretty, pretty damn good game, especially for a guy that I think racked up, I think, 600 yards on you the last three games. So, yeah, take that one every single time.
What might be overlooked because it ended up being called back was the fumble on the sideline. Branch made the recovery and took it to the house. That would have been another one. I mean, the referees made it. It's the right thing to do. Let the play out, and we'll review it later. And it was by, you know, a hair, it was the right call.
I was talking about this with Colton Pouncey from The Athletic. I do not recall a replay review taking as long as that one did. And they were showing it exactly what the ref was looking at in the big screen. And it was like, they were zoomed in on the toes at like 800 times. I mean, it was crazy how much they were looking at that play, trying to decide what to do. You know, you talk about game of inches. I mean, this was a moment of millimeters that decided that one. But again, it didn't ultimately play into the outcome. And I guess that, you know, makes it a little less meaningful, impactful, other than, you know, hurts Branch's defensive player of the year chances maybe a little.
Yeah. By the way, there was another play where, I mean, on the other side of the ball, where Goff got sacked, fumbled, and was able to recover. That would have been a huge turnover as well. All right. Special teams, you know, the few times Fox punted, he did very well, but let's all talk about Jake Bates. This was a play that, you know, he kicks the game-winning field goal, first one he's really had to, and passed obviously with flying colors. I want to ask you, because I have a friend of mine who, you know, I nitpick a lot, especially when it comes to time management, but I had no problem. My friend, actually, he said, why are they taking a knee? Why don't they run the ball to get closer? I said, when it's a 43, 44-yard field goal, nowadays, that's almost a chip shot. Getting it to the 38 or 39-yard field goal, that's not going to make that much of a difference. And also, if you hand the ball off, now maybe I'm a, you know, I remember the miracle of the Meadowlands and back in 79, you risk, could you imagine if they gave the ball to Gibbs or whoever, and he fumbles, and they lose, they don't get to kick a field goal.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're hitting all the points, right? Like the Vikings aren't playing the pass, and so they're just selling all out. You might lose more yardage on a handoff. They might get in the backfield and slice through and break it up or hit Goff, and so a 43-yarder at this point, a 44-yarder,
right.
It's not much longer than an extra point try. You know, if this was 54 yards,
right,
yeah, you're probably trying to find a way to throw the ball and gain a couple, you know, extra
yards. Which they did on first down on that drive, by the way.
Yeah. I think there's actually, you know, it's weird, but I think if you look at Bates' training camp, he actually had more struggles like the closer he got at times. And I don't know if it's just an angles thing. You know, you got to remember he's still really inexperienced. And so, you know, the ability to take a knee also lets you put it exactly where he wants it on the hash marks, right? Do you want to kick it dead on? Do you want it on the left hash? Do you want it on the right hash? All that stuff matters, and it's all part of the process. And, you know, I tried to, after the game, just a little bit highlight the entire operation because, yeah, Jake Bates is perfect on field goals this year, but Jack Fox plays into that. You know, he's holding the ball just mm-hmm. right. And both Fox and special teams coordinator Dave Phipp really gave a lot of praise to undrafted rookie snapper Hogan Hatton. Who
yeah. I mean, they got rid of Ryan because of him, right?
Yeah. Daly, you mean?
Yes, Sean Daly, right.
We're going to get it eventually. It's Scott Daly. Daly. It's a long snapper. You don't have to get it right. There's no quiz snapper, on long snappers. Yeah. But, you know, I can't tell the difference between long snappers outside of like bad, you know, bad snaps, which are few and far between. But the way Phipp described it is the entire operation from snap to hold to kick should take 1.3 seconds. And, you know, each segment of that is part of it. And whatever it is, Daly is getting it there just a fraction of a second sooner. And that's giving Fox just a fraction of a second more time to get that hold just right.
You mean Hatton? See, I screwed you up.
I don't know what's happening anymore. Yeah. Right. And so, it's in a really good place. The entire operation's in a really good place. And Fox was just raving about the job that Hatton is doing in terms of just he makes it easy for him. He doesn't have to think because that ball is in the right spot every time. The laces are in the same way every single time. And it's just been super easy for him to be consistent, creating consistency through the entire operation.
All right, final thing. What did you dislike the most?
Ooh, that's a good question. I will hit you with this one. You know, we talk about the pass rush, not, you know, necessarily being there, certainly not consistently, but I thought the run defense took a pretty big step back. I had a level of concern about that because you take away Hutchinson and Davenport, who are two very underrated run defenders. Hutchinson is relentless on the backside. Teams actually run away from him, and he's so athletic and so persistent that he tracks a lot of plays down in the backside. And then Davenport, we know what he is, right? Like super, super physical, seals up the wall. And, you know, not just Aaron Jones's 34-yard carry, the Vikings on the whole averaged 6.6 yards per carry on the game.
Correct.
Darnold got loose a few times, as we talked about, but it's a performance that needs to get better because that's what the Lions' kind of identity is on defense. They make you one-dimensional, and even if that one dimension is passing and, you know, most teams pass, it's comforting knowing that an opponent can't run against you and they will just run into this wall every single time they try to go up to the middle. And this was not the case in this one. It seemed, you know, I'll look at the film later, but it seemed like the Vikings were trying a lot of counter runs. Like they had something schemed up specifically to combat a weakness, but it's definitely an area I think that they need to tighten up as they march forward.
Next up is the Tennessee Titans, who struggled mightily after getting a 10-0 lead against Buffalo. Mason Rudolph is their quarterback. I don't know if Levis is coming back, but real quick, and we'll do more of this major deep dive during the week. But when you look at that roster, especially offensively, they got nothing.
You're talking about the Titans?
Yes.
Oh God,
Tony Pollard. That's their running back there. You know, defensively they have some interesting people, including Harold Landry, who could look really good here, but you know, whatever.
You know, it's funny because like they have names, right? Yeah. Like they have DeAndre
Quandre Diggs.
Oh no. Well, I was just on offense, but yeah. Man, they just let go of the other safety. Just released him because he asked. Adams. But you know, offensively, look at Pollard was a good running back in Dallas, I think accentuated by the Dallas offensive line. I think Spears is a very good complementary running back and probably has more potential in that as a dual threat. I thought he was really good coming out of college. And then
Calvin Ridley.
Really big, yeah, two really big names at receiver in Hopkins and Ridley, who I mean, look, that speaks, I think, to your quarterback play, right? Like it's just not good. And I saw a fun stat, and I don't know, I don't think Malik Willis would have succeeded there either because it boils down to coaching, right? But Malik Willis's quarterback rating this year was like 114, and Levis is at 70, and Mason Rudolph's at like 65. Like you traded away your best quarterback potentially. I don't know, that organization is in a mess. They're probably heading toward a top 10 draft pick, and
I'm sure Dan Campbell is going to say, you know, trap game here.
Yeah,
you cannot let your Lambeau the following week,
for sure. And that That is a real thing in sports. I think Dan Campbell, because he's a former player and because he's experienced all these things, knows how to get through to his roster to make sure that they don't fall for those things. But you definitely have to preach against it all through the week, that you can't sleep on anybody. And yeah, with Green Bay and the Texans coming up, like you just can't afford a loss there, because you've got two really, really tough games coming up on the road.
All right. Well, we will see you out in Allen Park, hopefully, and definitely at Ford Field on Sunday when they take on the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah. As always, this podcast was produced by Zach Clark. Does a phenomenal job for us. You can find the podcast on the Odyssey app, which is free, Apple Podcast, Spotify. As we talked about last week, Sony's 8-track player, all the places you can find podcasts were there. Please subscribe, download. Really appreciate all of it. For Stoney, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.